From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jemma Gaudet. It's Idaho Matters. There's a shortage of more than 150 drugs, some of them life-saving cancer treatments, and more people are leaving their pharmacies empty-handed. So why are we seeing these shortages? How are hospitals in Idaho coping, and what can you do if you can't find your medicine? Joining us for this special Doctor Roundtable today are Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, Brian Dotter, Senior Director of Pharmacy for St. Luke's Health System, and Dr. Frank Johnson, Chief Medical Officer for St. Luke's Boise, Elmore, and McCall. Good afternoon, everyone. How's everybody doing today?
Good, Samantha. Hi.
Thank you.
Dr. Payne, I'm going to start with you. Talk about drug shortages in general. I went on the FDA drug shortage list, and anybody can do this, and took a look just a few minutes ago. We were up to 181 reported drugs that there were a shortage of. That was a badly constructed sentence, but you got my idea. Tell us what's going on, Dr. Payne. And this is not a one-size-fits-all, as we are going to find out.
Well, that's right, Samantha. And drug shortages aren't new just since the pandemic. I think the pandemic has amplified some of these drug shortages. But we had over the last decade, we have had times when we've had more drug shortages than we do even today. Ooh. And they arise for many different kinds of reasons. Sometimes there's quality issues at a manufacturing plant, and it has to be temporarily closed down and remedied. Sometimes we have natural disasters affecting a manufacturing plant, like the recent tornado issue I think it was Kentucky. I can't remember right now, but sometimes we have drug makers that go into bankruptcy and go out of business. Sometimes we have issues where it's not necessarily just the drug shortage. It might be a shortage or inability to get a key ingredient. We've also had other disruptions to the supply chain for medications that could affect things we need to administer the drugs with. For example, during the pandemic, there was a brief period of time where we had a shortage of needles that were necessary for certain injections. So it can be a whole host of different problems. But I do think that Americans are increasingly seeing the effects of these drug shortages. We previously talked with Jemma about some of the shortages with Adderall and similar types of drugs. In that case, it was a matter that we just had unexpected increased demand for the drug in recent years that the manufacturer just couldn't keep up with that quickly. So it can be a whole host of reasons.
Absolutely. We're going to talk about some of those too, specifically. But Dr. Frank Johnson, I want to get you into the conversation. What are you seeing when it comes to drug shortages with St. Luke's, especially in Idaho?
Well, thank you. I think our biggest impact recently has been with some of our chemotherapy drugs. That doesn't impact a large number of people, but the potential impact is really high when some of the critical chemotherapy drugs are in shortage. And it's not just an Idaho problem, it's a national problem, as Dr. Pate points out. We have had to come around some adjustments in our chemotherapy regimens. Our excellent oncology doctors have looked for alternatives when there are shortages. And then our pharmacy team, with Brian Dotter on the call today being one of the key leaders, have been really effective at coordinating sharing of supplies around different health partners in our state, in our region, and nationally. So we've been really impacted by that. Thankfully, we've been finding ways to navigate through that shortage. I would say that during the triple-demic earlier this winter, when we had COVID, RSV, and influenza, We had some shortages in antibiotics that we needed to address. We made it through that. So thankfully, we're in a better spot there. Not perfect, but a better spot. I'd say that's the biggest impact that we've had. I don't know, Brian, do you have any other comments on that? You're really directly impacted and involved in some of those conversations.
Yeah, so we have a lot of processes here at St. Luke's to help mitigate these drug shortages. And it really requires multidisciplinary collaboration across many teams. As Dr. Johnson mentioned, you know, all of our work that we do with the clinical teams, but luckily we have a good buying team that stays on top of sourcing and can identify when these drug shortages are to occur and see how long they're anticipated to occur and see if there's alternatives that we can obtain. And to evaluate all options, working directly with our manufacturers and our wholesalers to help procure product to sustain through the anticipated shortage. But if not, then raising the alarm early so we can work closely with our clinical teams and develop strategies to help mitigate these shortages. So I think we've been very fortunate to have really good multidisciplinary collaboration to help really ensure that we have plans in place when these do occur.
Well, and I think, you know, let's jump into those chemotherapy drugs, because as you said, Dr. Johnson, not a lot of people use them, but they have a very big impact. I did a little looking around. I know an India plant shut down after an inspection. It's been hard for some of the makers to get some of the ingredients that they need. Two main drugs are very hard to find. And when you're talking about cancer treatment, for a lot of folks, and we've seen some folks out there who've been advocating about this, alternatives either can be very, very unpleasant for the patient or may not work at all. And without some of these drugs, we're talking about people dying in some cases.
Well, you're right to point that out. And the specific drugs that we were facing shortages with, intravenous methotrexate for some adult blood cancers and some pediatric solid tumor cancers, as well as some old, which methotrexate is an old chemotherapy drug, and some of our platinum-based chemotherapy regimens as well. Again, old chemotherapy drugs. However, for a small subset of cancers, those treatments are potentially curative treatments without any good alternative. So yeah, very big potential impact. Because this was a regional problem, it's a national problem, we did a nice job of relying on partnership around the state. We, during the pandemic, had state mock calls, a medical operation coordination cell when we were short in other supplies and resources. That was great relationships we developed across the state and the region through our ability to navigate the shortages of the pandemic. And we pulled that group together again when the shortages in those chemotherapy drugs became near critical, and we're able to rely on folks around the state to share supplies. We had a bit of that going on. We utilized partners in the region to secure additional supplies and really relied on one another. It was great that we had those relationships developed through the pandemic. There wasn't anything good about the pandemic, but at least we did develop some ability to be better at coordinating and sharing resources. We relied on that in this circumstance because, yeah, there really aren't good alternatives to those specific medications.
Got it. Dr. Pate, as the former CEO of a major hospital system, How scary is this to you, the idea that there are all these drugs out there that we can't get that can have, you know, small to major effects to the patients?
Well, it's a big concern. And of course, as Brian and Dr. Johnson said, with many of these shortages, we can find workarounds. However, as you heard with Dr. Johnson mentioning about some of the chemotherapy, there's also some shortages in some medicine that people with breathing problems are very dependent upon. That's when it gets scary, especially when there aren't good substitutes. And I think that what you know, from my standpoint looking at it, is we need more attention on this from Congress, from our elected officials. It seems like we spend an awful lot of time and energy on some things that really don't impact people's daily lives, when there are issues like this that really are huge and could be very impactful. And I just don't think we've given this the attention that it needs. We certainly have at times, you know, had a special committee or this or that, and there's been some minor changes, but we're not getting at the kind of risk mitigation that we need for the multiple potential failures in the pharmaceutical supply chain that we face. And probably those challenges are only growing, not getting better. So I think we need a lot more attention. And it is a big concern for all of us in healthcare that we want to be able to give our patients the very best care. And most of the time we can, but these times when we don't, we just don't have what we need, that is when it's really heartbreaking.
Well, yes, absolutely. And, you know, we talked about chemotherapy drugs. You mentioned a few others. Albuterol is one of these. It's short. We had a company that went bankrupt that made albuterol and closed three U.S. plants recently. Only one plant in America is left making albuterol. And there were some spikes in demand, I understand. And Brian, I was going to ask you about these. This is a drug that people need to breathe. We're talking about asthma and COPD and people who are having, you know, an asthma attack, who go into the hospital and need this drug to breathe. And there's a shortage. And you folks saw a high demand for this, especially during the triple-demic. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure, so you're right. This is an example where there's multiple factors coming into play that can create the shortage. Some of it is business with a couple manufacturers going bankrupt and leaving the market, and then the one manufacturer not being able to up their supply to keep up with demand, especially in the face of dramatic increases in utilization across the country and regionally with the triple-demic, like Dr. Johnson mentioned, with RSV, COVID, and flu. Luckily, there are other similar medications that are rapid-acting that can be used. We prefer not to use them because of costs and other factors, but they are alternatives that we were able to use along with this, as well as different delivery models with this particular medication to help people be able to breathe when they have this respiratory distress. But it really highlights where there's multiple factors, and we have to work closely together to identify the alternatives, see and see how we can deliver them safely and effectively. Takes a collaboration there.
It sounds like collaboration is key, especially with a lot of this. Dr. Pate, you mentioned Adderall. I know that some of the other ADHD drugs out there have been short. There have been manufacturing delays, COVID issues. You mentioned an increase in demand. I saw there has been a more than 10% increase in prescriptions just for Adderall in 2020 alone. So there's more demand, and then there's less availability. I know you also wanted to mention antibiotics and shortages of those, which can also be quite complicated.
Yes, and with the antibiotics, what we are most often dealing with these days are kind of the older antibiotics, our go-to antibiotics. They're not nearly as expensive as many of the new drugs, but that also means that they're typically not as profitable for drug companies and drug manufacturers. And so we certainly can see times where we have shortages of some of these key medications that are really important for certain conditions. And, you know, like Ryan was saying, and you know, a lot of times if we have a shortage of one medication, we can go to another one. But what is particularly of concern in the antibiotic realm is when we have as many very drug-resistant infections as we're dealing with these days. And we've talked on previous shows about some of the drug-resistant gonorrhea, some of the other kinds of drug-resistant infections that we're dealing with, where there is a particular drug that is very helpful for this condition, and then it's in short supply. So we're going to have to deal with the economics of the pharmaceutical industry as well. Like you already mentioned about that one manufacturer going bankrupt, maybe we need more financial regulation. We're going to need to figure out what do we need to do about incentives to keep some of these very key but low-cost drugs in production. And we're going to have to deal with the fact that when we have made this such a competitive market, and where drug companies have to satisfy their shareholders, it's costly to build in redundancy. It's costly to have variations from what your normal is. And so it's not incentivized. And we're going to have to think about how do we give pharmaceutical companies the incentives to have redundancy or ability to keep up the production of certain drugs, not all, but certain where we are really, really dependent on them.
We've talked a little bit about possible ways to fix the problem. And of course, as we have pointed out, it's not a one size fits all fix. When you've got everything from tornadoes to manufacturing delays to bankruptcies, there's just not one way to get the drugs back online that you need. I've seen a few things, relaxing rules, getting more drugs from China, giving less of the drugs you have, finding alternatives. Some drugs have no alternatives. And Dr. Johnson and Brian, you mentioned alternatives for some drugs, but what happens when you can't find alternatives for drugs at the hospitals? What do you do at that point?
Sure. This is Brian. I can take that. So luckily we have a buying team that has multiple avenues to procure medications. So we have relationships and contracts set up with wholesalers and secondary backup wholesalers, as well as contracts with manufacturers out there. But when nothing is available, there have been times when the FDA has allowed for temporary importation. I think a good example of this would be the cisplatin shortage that Dr. Johnson mentioned earlier for oncology patients who require these platinum-based therapies, where the FDA has temporarily allowed for importation of certain lots of certain Chinese manufactured product. And they've expanded that as they've seen national need for this. And so they're continuing to partner with this Chinese manufacturer and a Canadian distributor to help make sure that allocations are being sent out appropriately to all the right places so patients can have access to these therapies. So there's other channels that we've used to procure, whether it's been through alternate relationships with wholesalers or manufacturers, or even partnering together with other health systems in the region. Like Dr. Johnson mentioned, we did this with our state. Some of those relationships we've developed with COVID, where there was sharing of product to ensure we could provide that access to care. So from the procurement side, that's, you know, what we look to when there's no other options. And I think Dr. Johnson could probably speak more to the clinical side.
I think you're right, Brian. And, before answering that, your comments really reflect one of the things I wanted to highlight in Dr. Pate's response to an earlier question that Samantha, you made. Samantha, you asked, should patients be scared? And I believe Dr. Pate responded, well, you should be concerned. And I really like that distinction. We have developed over the last 20 years of drug shortages, the competencies, the skills, the knowledge, the procedures, the relationships necessary to accommodate near critical shortages. You've heard from Brian what some of those strategies are. And those are all things that we've been able to develop over the last decade and have in a pretty robust fashion right now. So it is reason for concern. I don't think it's reason for fear at this point, because we do have some of those strategies in place to get needed medicine when it does hit that near critical point. And those have been really effective. I think the biggest benefit that we're seeing with this is through communication, coordination, conversation with state, regional, national partners in order to secure those medications when it gets to that point. Our physician teams have been really fantastic about being mindful around using medicines efficiently, not wasting medicine when we can avoid it, using alternatives when those are safe, appropriate, and we'll get the same outcome as what we would expect. And so we do rely on our physician teams to help guide those clinical decisions. They've been fantastic.
I like the idea. Don't be scared. And in just a little bit, we'll talk about what folks can do if they do go to the pharmacy and can't find what they're looking for. But Dr. Pate, I'm gonna throw this at you. When you've got some of these drugs, like the cancer drugs that literally will save your life, stop the cancer from killing you, and you don't have the drug. You have had to face this when we reached a point during the COVID pandemic when there were concerns and decisions made about what to do if there weren't enough hospital beds. Are we talking about, you know, an issue of having to prioritize patients at some point? And maybe we're not there now, but, you know, if we run into drug shortages that are critical, like these cancer drugs that can save lives.
Yeah, well, that could certainly happen if we have a shortage and there's no rapid way to address that. You know, Brian mentioned, the potential for easing restrictions on importation, or there could be other things that we could do where, you know, even if it's a very important chemotherapeutic agent that we don't have a good substitute, sometimes it's not terribly problematic if you have to extend, you know, the treatment time, add a week to it or something. Now, if we can't get it, if there's no way to get it in months, yeah, that's a much bigger concern. And it is devastating to those people that know they could benefit by that drug. And then when we don't have enough, we have to decide, well, who's going to benefit the most from that drug? And no doctor wants to be in that business. We want to help everyone. So fortunately, that doesn't happen very often. But yes, it could be an issue. And therefore, I think the most important thing is for the administration to realize that this is a big risk. It's not a huge problem today. It is a problem, but it's not a huge problem, but it is a risk. And especially when you talk about all the different pieces to this, because it's not just making the drug, but what about the risks of distribution? You know, we saw during the pandemic when our shipping got very, very delayed. What if there was a problem with the railroads, which we've seen those isolated events, or other distribution issues? We have to start to plan for identifying all these various risks and how can we mitigate those risks. And I hope the administration would consider bringing together experts in all of these different areas. I would assume that the best approach is let's look at where the most important drugs and supplies, and where are those single sourced? In other words, there's only one plant or one company, or they're made in another country. And, you know, even with many of the things that we get from other countries, you've heard the name of China coming up. China makes a lot of the things that we depend on, and India is the other country. And you can think about, well, you know, is there something that could be a huge threat to China? Well, we've had several pandemics that have originated in China. So you could imagine how it could impact China manufacturing in India. You know, there's weather events that we don't experience here, but they experience, and those could be threats. And so we just have to think about all these different threats and figure out how do we mitigate that? How do we build redundancies in? How do we plan for unusual events? And I think there's much more that can be done, but we should be getting prepared.
And Brian, you were going to add a little bit to what Dr. Pate said about some of where these drugs are manufactured and found, a lot of them overseas.
Yeah, so Dr. Pate definitely highlighted a key piece here and a concern out there with 80% of our manufacturing facilities for active ingredients for our medications are produced offshore. And the Administration for Strategic Preparedness and Response estimates that about 90 to 95% of our generic injectable drugs used for critical care are located or their active pharmacy ingredients are produced in China or India. And as part of this, there was a request for information that was sent out by Senator Crapo and Representative Morris Rogers, of which St. Luke's has participated in providing more information on drug shortages and some of the concerns we've discussed here, along with some recommendations for what we'd like them to consider. So that's a little bit of background to how reliant we are with offshore production of medications.
Which is tricky, very tricky, because then, you know, if something happens, whether it's a natural disaster or a political situation or a shortage of drugs or materials, as we've said, there's no one size fits all for these. And it creates issues, definitely. Okay, so let's talk about patients. Dr. Johnson, you mentioned I think the number one thing when I wrote down what can patients do, I wrote down don't panic. can you add to that, please?
Perfect. I think that's accurate. Right now, our teams, our doctors, whether they're with St. Luke's or St. Alphonsus or any of our other providers around the state, are really working hard to coordinate our ability to provide needed treatment and therapies to our patients. So talk to your doctor. If there are some concerns about shortages and upcoming shortages for medications that are needed by a patient, talk to your doctor. Plan for that. Think through what that's going to look like. I'm sure that your doctor can either talk about ways to reassure you about that particular medicine you're on, or talk about alternatives if they're available, or talk about what other strategies can be taken to ensure that you still get great care and get the right treatment that you need. So conversation with your doctor is the right approach to have. Our teams are really doing a nice job in that area.
And I would think that you mentioned alternatives, finding alternatives, research, maybe trying to get yourself as informed as possible and planning ahead. I think, Brian, some of what you're doing on a hospital level would translate to folks. You know, just to be aware of, you know, what you take and what else might be out there, so you can talk to your doctor about it.
Yeah, so I think, close communication with your provider and pharmacist, making sure your med lists are always up to date and staying in coordination with them with refills so they know where you're at and when medications are needed. The providers know when medications are going short and do have backup plans for how they can help treat these, and I think Dr. Johns can speak more to that, but advice is always to keep in close communication with your providers.
Gotcha. And then, so here's a question. Should you take less of the drug that you have left? I'm guessing this is not a good idea, but I'm going to throw it out there, especially to you, Dr. Johnson, and to you, Dr. Pate.
Yeah, I will say only if your doctor feels that's safe. It's always appropriate to talk with your doctor, talk with your pharmacist when you're on medications, to review whether those medications are still appropriate, still needed, still something that the dose is correct. So make sure that you're having that conversation. And goodness, if it's safe to stop a medication, take a lower dose, spread out the duration, absolutely, it's worthwhile doing. But don't do that without talking with your physician, your provider, your pharmacist first.
We've heard about black markets going overseas, people going to Canada, people going to Mexico. looking for either alternatives or more of the drug that's missing. How safe is this? Dr. Pate, I'm going to throw you in the mix on this one.
Well, I would say that there's a reason why we regulate the import of medications. And so I would say in general, that's a very risky proposition. The problem is you're not going to know what you're getting. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, those people that go across the border and go to Canadian pharmacies or whatever. I'm talking about if you're buying things over the internet or otherwise having people bring stuff from other countries and all. I would say that's very, very dangerous. I'd go back to the advice that Dr. Johnson gave that is perfect. Instead of trying to solve the problem on your own, talk to your doctor. Or another great resource is talk to your pharmacist and say, hey, are there ideas or suggestions? And because then your pharmacist can also get in touch with your doctor and see if a different approach would be appropriate.
And this might be a good point, Dr. Pate, for you to give a shout out to pharmacists, because I know you want to do that.
Yeah, I wanted to take the opportunity. During this pandemic, we've all seen how wonderful our healthcare providers are. But one of those providers that people generally only interact with in a retail setting where you're going into a pharmacy to get a prescription filled or buy something. And I just want to say, pharmacists do so much more. They are integral parts of our care. You've already heard Brian and how his talents in helping us deal with shortages. But we also have pharmacists that help us with very complicated patients where we're trying to manage their medications, their side effects, their drug interactions. Pharmacists do so much. They're so integral to the care we give. And they seldom get appreciation. So I just want to give a shout out on behalf of Brian, Dr. Johnson, and myself thank you to all the pharmacists out there. You really are making a difference. You're critical parts of the team, and we appreciate you.
And Dr. Johnson, you want to talk about the work that Homeland Security and the Government Affairs Committee are both doing.
Yeah, that's important. First of all, plus one to Dr. Pate's comments about pharmacists. Absolutely. And yes, the questions about what we can do as a country, what we can do as a government to try to address these. I'm grateful that this has got the attention of our legislators at the national level. The Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee just last month reached out for information. I'm sure it wasn't just to us, it was to multiple people around the country, but asking for some advice and information on how best government policy could be structured in order to help address these issues. And I felt like our pharmacy team responded with a great set of recommendations, which I anticipate that committee will be investigating. And that's number one, increase redundancy. Try to reduce the likelihood that just one factory going down will create critical shortages. Increase on or near shoring of supplies and production, bringing those closer to limit the possibility that distant disruptions in the supply chain can impact our supplies. Third is increasing supply chain transparency. There's a lot of processes that go in place to secure safe, good medications, and there's the production of the initial raw ingredients, getting them to the pharmacy, the production of the pharmacy, getting to where they need to go. So provide a little more transparency so we can address risks proactively. And the final one is to consider regulatory adjustments where regulations have an adverse impact on our ability to secure medication, whether that's regulations around medication wasting, which makes sense. We don't want to waste medication, but if that means that we're producing multiple vials that have small amount in each vial rather than larger supplies, that can sometimes have a paradoxical impact on supplies, whether it's regulations around compounding or whether it's regulations around cost for generic medications. There's potentially some opportunity there. And so I'm grateful that Homeland Security Government Affairs Committee is looking into that.
Cutting red tape. I'm all in favor of that. I'm going to take a page from some of what you've been doing, Brian. It sounds like get educated, get on top of it. If you're using a medication, find out about it. Join support groups. Keep your eyes open. Try to find out what's going on. I know there are places where you can report shortages if you run into them at your pharmacy, and that helps other people know what's going on in your area. I think the more folks know, the better. And you know, if you can find out ahead of time, then maybe you can get in and talk to your doctor and find out about those alternatives. Dr. Pate, in the couple of minutes we have left, any last words you want to throw in for folks about what they can do to try and either help on a national level by talking to the representatives, or when they go to the pharmacy and the pharmacist says, we don't have any?
Yeah, well, I think you've heard the good advice on this interview. Let me just summarize. Number one, be knowledgeable. Be knowledgeable about the medications you're taking, and frequently update your medication list, like Brian said. Talk to your physician periodically about, well, do I need to continue this medication, or is there a less costly option, or something that is easier to take, or not subject to supply disruptions, like Dr. Johnson said. And then you're right. Talk to your legislators. Tell them that this is an issue you think the government should address. And then let's finally, for those that are lawmakers or elected officials, remember, it's not just the medications. We've got to look at the entire supply chain, because any part in that supply chain that breaks down can compromise our access. So I think those are really good points that Brian and Dr. Johnson have made today.
I want to thank the three of you so much for this. I know how frustrating this can be for folks who are facing these shortages, not just doctors, but pharmacists and patients specifically. So thank you so much for breaking some of this down and giving us some good advice. We want to thank Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, Brian Dodder, Senior Director of Pharmacy for St. Luke's Health System, and Dr. Frank Johnson, Chief Medical Officer for St. Luke's Boise, Elmore, and McCall, talking about drug shortages. We'll put more information and links on our website, boisestatepublicradio.org. Again, thank all of you so much.
Thank you, Samantha.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Samantha Wright. We'll see you tomorrow.
Want to learn how to be a master of business without going back to school? Listen to the Planet Money MBA. No suits, no PowerPoints, just the secrets of business school delivered straight to your ears. Every Wednesday till Labor Day on Planet Money from NPR.